any of us who've been in it for long enough, our entire career has been littered with jobs that we didn't get, projects that we thought were going to go for sure, dozens of unproduced scripts littering the floor.
All of us are running into both major and minor failures in Hollywood every single day.
For every success, there is months, sometimes even years, of painful failure.
This is one of the only businesses I can think of where failure is the default. That's the norm. You have to be able to persevere.
Like everything in our business, your hands get calloused and it all bounces off you. That process takes years. That doesn't happen overnight.
I was being told by my manager, it's yours to lose. And I promptly lost it. And I remember thinking like, well, that's it for me. I blew my one big shot. What I've realized from that moment is it's never one big shot. There will be other shots.
Screaming into the Hollywood Abyss is brought to you by Scriptation, the Emmy award-winning app that instantly transfers your notes into new drafts in seconds. Scriptation allows you to digitally mark up scripts, separate notes into layers, track changes across revisions, and so much more. Insert Noah saying something nice about Scriptation.
Dan, I think this is where they actually want me to talk about how much I love it. And I do love it. It's great. Its collating function transformed me from the messiest writer in Hollywood to, well, ever so slightly less messy. My wife might have other things to say about that. Scriptation listeners can get a free month of Scriptation by going to scriptation.com/Scriptation.
For those of you who don't understand slightly drawly American accents, that's scriptation.com/S-I-T-H-A. Welcome back to Screaming Into the Hollywood Abyss, a podcast about rejection, failure, and adversity in the entertainment industry. I am, as ever, your non-entertainment co-host, Dan Rutstein.
And I am still in the entertainment business, hopefully. The still in the entertainment business co-host Noah Evslin. On today's podcast, I'm thrilled to introduce TV writer, producer, and showrunner Ted Cohen to the podcast. Ted has written on so many great shows, including but not limited to Friends, Rules of Engagement, Veep, and Succession. He's also won 4 primetime Emmys for his work on these shows. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, I was hobnobbing at a very Hollywood party the other day, an 11th birthday party, at which I bumped into Ted. And as awkward parents do when the kids are off playing together, we started chatting about, I think he'd just come back from England where he was working on some TV show. And obviously this is Hollywood. So I'm like, yeah, I'm sure you were working on your little independent show. And then we discovered, of course, that it was Succession, which has done reasonably successfully. And then we realized that Ted is the perfect guest to come on the show. So I'm delighted to have you join us, Ted, after our fortuitous meeting. So you have quite an impressive selection of credits. You worked on some incredible shows. So I'm sort of stuck on the, you know, where can we find some failure stuff? But I'm actually going to start with, because I always find this fascinating, the Emmys. So you've won 4, which is not bad work. Tell me how you feel at award shows where presumably you've obviously won some, but you've also not won others. Talk me through what it's like, because I know you guys aren't in it for the awards, but then you presumably still enjoy dressing up and winning some.
Yeah, I mean, I always say it's nicer to win than to lose, which is, I mean, probably most of us feel that way. I think I've lost more Emmys than I've won over the years. And, you know, it's always a weird thing, because by the time you're there and they're doing it, it's often a year or two in the past. So it's not like part of your daily life, and it's lovely just because you get to see people you haven't seen in a while. You know, I haven't seen the cast and the writers and stuff like that. What can I say? It's really nice. And then, you know, right afterwards, especially as a writer, you realize how small and inconsequential you are, because no one wants to talk to you. They just want to talk to the actors, and maybe to a certain extent, the directors. But, you know, it's always whatever. It's always nice to be to be recognized, you know, and I've just, you know, I've been lucky enough to work on shows that were like good shows that also got recognition. I mean, there's so many good shows that then don't get that kind of recognition. And I think that can be really frustrating for people. But yeah, I've been lucky, which is nice.
What's the cutoff line? And I genuinely have no idea about this, for making it onto the stage, because obviously when the show wins, not obviously an individual person, then you tend to see sort of quite a lot of people come up, and obviously you recognize the cast. And then, you know, in the case of Succession, you sort of recognize Jesse, but do all the writers go on? Is there a line? Have you always been above or below that line to make the stage?
I think everyone rushes the stage. Not everybody gets an Emmy. You have to have a producer credit or above. So if you're a writer below producer level, like exec story editor, staff writer, everybody still goes up, but you don't get a statue. But I think it's just, you know, it's more fun the more people are up there, obviously. And you know, everyone does work so hard on the show. It's like, in a way, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, I know they have to draw the line somewhere, but sometimes it's kind of ridiculous where it actually gets drawn.
I think Dan jumped us to the climactic part of this podcast, which is the point about the Emmys. Let's backtrack a little bit so people can get some context on your career. You know, I only mentioned four of your at least 14 credits, Friends. You know, it looked like you're on over 100 episodes of Friends. But let's talk about, you know, before that, because obviously there might be a before and after Friends, and then even a middle period for you. Like, what was it like trying to break into the industry, and were there any challenges for you when you were first getting started?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started my career with terrible failure, which was I actually went to law school, and I, you know, after college, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I applied to law school like many people do when they don't totally know what they want to do. And I quickly realized like I was just going to make the worst lawyer of all time. I worked at like a big corporate firm for the summer, and I just remember being given assignments and just looking at them and not knowing how to make heads or tails out of them, and just shoving them in a desk drawer and realizing like I needed to find something else to do fast. And really, I knew a few people who already were out here. I was like, you know, I grew up on TV, but it wasn't like books or movies. I had no idea that it actually got written by real people. And, it's just sort of, I thought they just, you know, the shows just showed up on your screen and that was it. So I didn't really realize it was a job. And I had friends who were out here who were doing it. And so with my writing partner at the time, was my best friend from college, we wrote a spec Simpsons, in which Homer gets wrongfully fired, and actually Alan Dershowitz was his attorney, his wrongful termination suit. So I was able to use some of my law school education for that. And then, you know, we did what everyone does. Like, we wrote specs, we got on, you know, there's the first show we ever got on was a show called Minor Adjustments. It was like about a child psychologist who's really bad with his own kids, but really good at his job. And it was like on 7:30 on Sunday nights, and everyone cared about it so little that because I think it was on like on after. It often would get bumped because of football. And so at some point the network was like, could you just write sort of three separate standalone acts of the show so we can air it in like an 8-minute segment, a 12-minute segment, or a 20-minute segment, depending. So it's sort of like, and Andrew and I got fired from that show after I think 12 episodes. I think it went on to 18. And then, you know, we worked on a couple of other shows that were very short-lived. And then Andrew knew a couple people who were already on the staff of Friends, And so they had read our stuff and rejected us, I think, first season and second season and third season. And then at the end of third season, you know, we'd already been on probably like three or four other shows by that point. They were on episode 23 of 26 or something. And they were completely burnt out. And they were like, why don't you guys come in and basically audition? And so we came in and they gave us what I'm sure to them was like how they did things at the time. So they broke out the stories, but they were so running on fumes that basically they gave us almost nothing. And they were like, can you have the script in on Monday? And this was like on a Thursday. So we were just totally shitting bricks. I mean, it was like we knew that if we didn't do a good job, that we'd never get hired on the show. But we also were not given the tools or the time with which to do a good job, which completely paralyzed us. And we spent the whole weekend, you know, you're writing, like thinking, this is terrible, this is terrible. And but we handed it in and they managed to turn it into something. And we didn't embarrass ourselves, I guess, enough that then when it came time at the beginning of fourth season to hire, they had some people leaving and they needed fresh blood. And so that's when we actually got a permanent position on the show. But it was like, it was definitely a scary process. And I think by that point, you know, even when you're on a show that's coming back like Friends, you know, you don't know if you're coming back every year. And I always, and I think maybe that's just a writer mentality, but like, even though I thought everyone liked us and I thought we did a decent job and we were moving up the ranks, you still always have this feeling like they're going to just drop the bomb on us, right? Like we're not coming back next year. And so I think that, and especially in a show like Friends, which was like, you know, it was an intense process on that show. Like we often would work, you know, we didn't work on the weekends, but you know, during the week it was not uncommon to work 80 hour weeks and to sort of, you know, have someone hand you a McDonald's breakfast as you were leaving at 6 a.m. to go home and then to come back for the rehearsal at 3 o'clock where, you know, that afternoon. So and maybe that's a good thing about that. That was one of the reasons why the show, I think, was successful and why people cared about it, is because we all really cared about it. And but you did kind of, we were always operating sort of under the feeling of like, you're only as good as your last, as the last good episode. And we always were very self-critical. And so there was always a feeling of like, it could always be better. And I think, whether or not, I mean, the show is a success, but I think it was a success due to kind of a failure mindset on the part of all of us, that we were always just about to kind of go under. and there was a lot of that kind of high pressure, I think, for us too.
I don't think, by the way, that feeling 30, I don't know, 25 years, however long 30 years might've passed, but that feeling of that you feel like you're going to get fired every year stays for almost every Hollywood writer on every job. That's, I think it's what joins us all at the hip is our fear that we're going to die, fear that we're going to get fired and not going to die. Yeah. And we will die of, other reasons, but I want to go back to something real quick. Cause you kind of blew by it. Were you given a freelance or were you asked to write this thing on spec in 4 days and then they were judging it based on that? Or did your agents call you and like, guys, we got good news and we got bad news. Good news is you got a freelance. Bad news is it's due Monday. You're going to meet them today on a Thursday.
It was basically that. It was like totally last minute decision. They realized, you know, like they could use a hand to have somebody else bang out a quick draft of this. Everyone else was exhausted or working on other things. And so the opportunity just sort of came about out of nowhere. And so it was a freelance, But it wasn't like, yeah, we didn't know in September you're going to come in March and do this. It was just like, come in, whatever, put down what you're doing. I think we were working on something else at the time, which we did, but just, come in and audition for this job. So
obviously Friends did reasonably well. You were on the show, it was doing well. You got to rush the stage, get your Emmy. When you came off Friends, did you get a sort of post-Friends bounce career-wise in terms of your next role? And given what you said about the fact that everyone always thinks they're going to get fired, did you think once it finished that you would get something else, or were you worried that that would be it?
I think so. We went straight from Friends into a development deal, which at the time was at Paramount, which then got swallowed into like CBS Productions, which was at the time fairly well trod path, right? So you would come off a show, if it was a successful show, and do your own development. And that was very much a rude awakening because, by the end of Friends, like we'd been there for 7 years. And you've gotten good at doing something, right? Because you're there, day in and day out, and you've kind of risen with the show, and the show is successful. And then, we were young and inexperienced in development, had never developed anything. And it's just a completely different beast. And as you guys know, the success rate is so low. So, going into that, I think just on the basis of just youth and naivete, like we're like, okay, well now we'll just make our Friends, and that's not how it works. You know what I mean? And so we wrote, over the course of like 10 years, we wrote probably two pilots a year for 10 years, sometimes more, and we got to shoot some of them, and a few, I think, were good, and probably, I was deeply saddened when they didn't get on, and some I was like, we did this to, this was a disaster, and I'm glad it didn't go anywhere. But I mean, it was definitely it was development in that way was hard. It's really hard. It's a totally different skill. And I do think, Dan, just to answer your question, and I think one thing I will say is nobody really cares. If you're coming off of a hit show or a show that does well, if you created the show, if it's your show, I think you get, there is lots of goodwill, and there's a desire to see what you do next. And there are people who are out there who are going to give you, some freedom kind of to do what you want. If you're on a staff, it doesn't really give you anything. It really doesn't, because you're part of the team, but you didn't create the show. And I think that there is a difference there. I mean, there just is. So I think to that was like, I think a lot of people think, well, I'm going to come off the show, and then I'm going to make mine. I'm going to do my Friends. And it just doesn't work that way. You don't get a leg up. You don't get any special consideration. I think the people who are deciding the shows, they're not deciding them based on stuff like that. But deciding on what gets picked up has nothing to do with that. You know what I mean? An actor gets something picked up, but like, unless you're like, if you're David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, if you're somebody like that, and you've like run a super duper hit show, then maybe your expertise, is a factor in whether or not a show gets picked up. But other than that, I don't think it carries forward. I really don't. I think that's one thing about this business. You do have to keep, proving yourself. I mean, I guess it's kind of what I meant by that failure mindset is like, the second that you start thinking, well, I should get this, or I deserve this, or, but I just did this, so I should get that, I think you're, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I think it's always about, you have to keep sort of showing people what you can do. And I think also you have to keep putting yourself out there, working on new things, meeting new people. You know, I think otherwise, you know, I know a lot of people who, I think, you know, they came off something very successful and then, you know, we're thinking, oh, I'm just going to get on another show that's going to go for 8 years or 10 years. And it doesn't happen. And it's very easy in that situation to kind of just wait and wait for something to come your way. And I think that ends up not working most of the time, you know.
So bringing your Emmy with you to pitch meetings doesn't really mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. No, believe it or not, it just comes off as desperate and grasping and and insecure.
To that point, Ted, that as you say, being on one doesn't guarantee you'll be on any more. I know writers are terrible at answering questions about why they're so good, but you've now been on, you know, Friends and Veep and Succession, all shows that obviously they're very good shows. In a you know, if you're in Hollywood, you know, there's ways people look at them, but also they're just big shows that everyone's heard of. How have you managed to do that? Given you don't get a freebie by being on Friends, how have you managed to have three incredibly successful shows that you've been on for significant periods of time? What do you attribute that to?
Well, you know, I mean, I'll point out, like, Friends ended in 2004, right? And then I went on to Veep in 2016. So I did 10 years of development and working on other people's shows and stuff too, you know. And then a couple of years of 2 or 3 years of kind of wandering in the desert where I knew I didn't want to keep doing comedy. And my partnership split up because of that. I had decided I really wanted to do drama and try to kind of do some different things. And so I had a couple of ideas of, like, an idea for drama I wanted to do, a spec, and I just sat down and I wrote it. And for me, it was very liberating, because I think after so many years of doing comedy development, where I know all the buyers, I know what they're going to say about this or that. I know you're internalizing other people's voices before you've even sat down to write anything. I didn't know anything about drama. I knew I had an idea, and I was just like, I'm just going to write this as though I don't know anything. I've never done it before. And that actually proved to be very liberating for me. And I think I actually wrote something that was compelling to people because I wasn't trying to get a job with it, and I wasn't trying to do anything. And it kind of went back to, like, okay, why did I take this job? Why did I do this weird job in the first place? Right. I don't want to be a lawyer. I want to do this because it's creative and it's fun and it's interesting. And instead I'm worrying about, is this pilot going to be good for CBS, and for who do I need to get cast to, you know, to get this over this through this hoop, whatever. And so after I wrote that drama, then, you know, people are like, this is good. I didn't know you could do this. And that's when some other doors started opening. So the door opened for me at Veep, and that, you know, and then off of Veep, a lot of the people some of the people involved in Veep were also involved in Succession. So I knew them, and I met them from being on the show, and they could see, you know, they knew me as a person. They read my stuff and they were like, I think Jesse might like this. So they gave it to Jesse. So truthfully, I mean, I love writing. I mean, and so I just do it even if I'm not being paid to do it. And I like to do things, but I do think that has something to do with getting exposed in different areas. It's very easy to get pigeonholed, because that's what, like anything else, right? You're learning a specific craft. You're like, I write crime procedurals, I write this kind of show, whatever. But And I think it's also because it's then the business, it makes it easier for agents and managers then to do their job, right? Because they're trying to get you one specific kind of job. But I think that's not why a lot of people go into a creative pursuit. It's like you go into creative pursuit because you like to come up with new things. You don't necessarily want to do the same thing over and over again. And, you know, you like to create things. And I think I think one of the things that has led me to be able to show people what I can do is that I would sometimes at certain points in my career, unplug from the machine and say, I'm not going to look at my bank account. I'm going to write. And I'm just going to write until this script is done. I'm going to ask people to read it and get thoughts. And then I'm going to put it out there and see if I can meet new people with it and get new opportunities with it. Does that answer your question, Dan? I mean, I think...
No, it really does.
No, I mean, I want to get even more granular because this is fascinating and sort of circles a question I was having too. And so for bigger context for the audience, it's not like Friends and Veep and Succession are all comedies, but they're very different. And if you're not in the industry, you don't realize how different they are. You go from multi-camera Friends world, which is a certain type of writing, to single camera Veep world, to more like feature Succession's its own beast. And I jokingly show that I have the book for Succession, like the book of scripts. Like, it's so radically different in many ways that it's reset the paradigm yet again, right? So you went through kind of three different paradigms of writing. And not only did you have to reinvent yourself, to, you know, I was really curious about that moment of reinvention where you said you wrote a drama to get off of Friends, because you are going to get pigeonholed. You're going to be on multicams until you die if you're on Friends and that's the thing you did. But you broke out of that now. And also you said your writing partnership broke up at around that time. So can we go back to that moment a little longer about like those moments of where you wanted to do something different? Did you have an eye on the prize, or was it just time to reinvent Ted Cohen, the writer, or was it just a good idea and you weren't thinking about those other things and you just decided you had to go for it?
Certainly didn't have an agenda. There was no eyes on the prize. I was hopeful in the way that everyone is hopeful that what I was doing would lead somewhere. But mostly the thing that I try to trust is like, and I, you know, the thing I try to trust is I'm sitting down, I'm writing this. I'm like, is it moving me? How am I enjoying this? Does this feel good to me? And I feel like for me, I have to trust that feeling. So, because if I don't, then I don't think anyone else will. But I definitely knew I didn't want to do comedy anymore. And also to say, I'll back up and say, the other thing that I honestly just did is like, I got older, right? So it's like, and I think that it's very easy if you're on a path to be like, I want to keep doing this job that I did and that I was good at when I was 25 or 30 or 35, right? But for me, that was like, who am I now? Like, I'm not going to be as good at writing those shows as I was when I don't want to write a show about dating in your 20s when I'm in my 40s or my 50s. Like, I don't know anything about that. And you can't speak to other people. It's sort of like, to me, it was also just taking stock of how have I changed? Where's my brain going, you know? And so the decision to do something different was, it was a conscious decision, right? It was a conscious decision to kind of write, but I didn't have any idea what I was going to do with it. I really didn't. Like, and, you know, I do remember like after I wrote us, I wrote the first spec I wrote, which was, I mean, lightly autobiographical, but it was really dark and really, really dark drama. I think probably I was like unconsciously trying to show people I could do anything other than just comedy. But I wrote that and I remember giving, you know, my agent and I met around on it. I ended up selling it. It never got made, but like, so it came, it was like staffing season. This was back in whenever it was 2015 or 14, when there was still staffing season and pilot season and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, she was like, do you want to staff? And I'm like, yeah, send me everything. Send me what's out there. And I read the dramas and I was like, you know, shit, this is the drama version of the comedy stuff that I was trying to get away from. It was like, it wasn't why I wrote this thing that I wrote, and it wasn't what I wanted to do. And I felt like, oh no, I dug myself out of one hole. I'm going to go now jump in another one. Do you know what I mean? And so I tried, you know, really, really hard to kind of just get one of my own projects going. You know, I wrote a couple more specs and stuff like that. And then, and then the job on Veep came, and I was like, I wasn't going to take a comedy job, but I also wasn't ever going to say no to that, because I knew that it, you know, it leads different places. And it's like, you don't to work again, to get to work with people of that caliber, it's like, you'd be crazy to say no. You know what I mean? You just learned so much. But there was no greater goal. There was really a kind of returning to basic principles, I guess I would say, right? And in the hopes that that would lead to opportunities that I really wanted to take.
Can we talk about greater goals? Because you're bringing this up right now. It's kind of interesting to me, and I don't mean to like jump through. We're going to talk about Succession some more because it's such a pivotal part of your career. But you mentioned sort of some regrets about not having your own show, and you come off of 128 or 38 episodes of Friends, 10 years of development, pilots that got shot but not made. Then you go into write your dream spec. It gets bought, not made. You go to two amazing shows back to back, Veep and you know, Succession. So you've been sort of out of that market for a little bit. Now you're coming off one of the biggest shows of all time, actually two of the biggest shows of all time. And are you ready now to create your own show? What happens now for you? Like, where's your headspace?
I mean, I've been writing my own pilots and doing things for the last, alongside Veep and Succession. So, you know, I think I've probably written five or six pilots over the course of and very different ones for different buyers and everything. And some of them, they're on different yard lines, right? I mean, some of them, one of them I started the big international thriller I started writing like about 6 or 7 years ago that came to life and then died and then came back to life and is now, I'm waiting to hear about it, whether or not it's going to go. And then a bunch of other ones that are sort of different stages of being done, another original idea and a couple of things that have been brought to me. So it's not to say that coming off of Succession, especially, I've had a lot of things, you know, come my way, which is really nice. I'm trying to, you know, I try to say yes to as many things as possible, because I know that things aren't, you know, first of all, anyone who thinks like, oh, I can't do these projects, what if they both happen at the same time? It's like never happened in the history of the world. And often I find I'm doing different kinds of work on different projects at the same time. So I kind of like, I'm only ever really actively engaged in like that day-to-day kind of grinding, working through the problems of writing a pilot, like on one or two things at a time. And then with other things, it'll be, okay, I've got to come up with a pitch, or I've got to write an outline and stuff like that, which I don't need my morning full capacity brain to do. So I can kind of, you know, do some intense writing in the morning and then go on and do other things in the afternoon. So, but it's all to say, like, I really try to do, I've had a lot of interesting stuff come to me since Succession ended. And I'm trying to say yes to it. I think I also, not just answered your question, but like, I really have wanted ever, you know, since I started doing this, to do something that was my own idea, that really came from me. And that tends to be the stuff that I'm most attracted to. It's not really where the business is right now. I mean, it's sort of like, there's so much IP, there's so much TV that's based on, magazine articles and books and podcasts and stuff. It's just, you know, I don't know enough about market forces to know why, other than I think probably has something to do with, you know, increasing conservatism, I think, in the business. And people want to have something that they can hold on to and say, this book sold this many copies, or this podcast had this many listeners. It's a kind of safety net for people. But like, you know, I think about TV as its own art form. And I think there's something to to creating a series that's meant to be a series by people who have been doing this and kind of know what a series, what could make a good series. I don't think that gets a lot of, you don't see that a lot anymore. But it's actually, I was thinking about this when I was at the Emmys, and it was like, what won all the awards was like, it's The Bear, Beef, and Succession, three original ideas by three really talented, you know, groups of people. And they were nurtured and protected by the places that put them on. There was a level of trust, I think, you know, and belief in the creators. And I think when that happens, there's a risk being taken in that, yeah, this isn't from a James Clancy book or from a whatever it is, but there's a chance at something greater, because I think it's specific to the medium. It's specific to what you're doing, right? And I think it's also when you have really, you know, smart people who have thought through what are the seasons of this show, not in a way where they know everything that's going to happen, but in a way that they're like, they've been thinking, because you have time, because it takes a really long time to make these things, that it's like, you have 5 or 6 years to think, oh, this would be a great story for here or that. There's so much thinking that goes into that. And I think, I wish it got a little bit more, it was a little bit more respected, I think. Because I think at the moment, anyway, you don't see that much of it, even though I think it's where the great successes come from most of the time.
So talking of great successes, I want to ask, this isn't really a failure question, so it doesn't really fit on the podcast, but Succession was such an amazing show, I want to ask it anyway. So it's a sort of two-part question, I guess. At what point in the Succession journey for you did you realize that not only was this potentially a show that was going to add to your growing Emmy collection, but it was also, as Noah said, it was a paradigm shift. Like, it wasn't just another good show. It was a different way of making a show and telling a story. Like, was it obvious from when you interviewed for it? I mean, when did you realize it was something more than just another room to be in?
I think pretty quickly when I got into the room and I saw how differently things were done than on any other show that I have worked on. I mean, just the level of, I mean, I will say, like, most of the Succession people, it's like 50% came from the world of comedy. It was a fun room and there was a lot of play and a lot of openness and all that, but it was also, it's a really complicated show. And, so I realized very quickly, oh, this isn't just sitting around coming up with stories about whatever, a three-beat story about, like, you know, Phoebe's dating a guy who whatever is blank. The stories were complicated. They took place over the course of the whole season. And on top of that, to have to know and learn about business and finance, not stuff that I knew anything about, but to really kind of realize, oh, if you're going to do well in here, you need to learn more. So to me, it was also like afterwards, I would be giving myself a crash course and stuff. And Jesse also gave us all, we all had different research projects. So through the course of the season where you would be like, learning, you know, I mean, like, I did a whole big thing on, like, Rupert Murdoch's attempts to infiltrate the Chinese entertainment market, and another one on, like, Black Cube and like that, you know, catch and kill stuff. And so, and everyone had their things that they, you know, kind of had to, which often, by the way, none of it would end up on the screen, but it all kind of gave that texture to the show. But yeah, I realized also was a really smart and intimidating group of people. So, that was a wake up call to me too. It was like, okay, everybody really knows what they're talking about. And not that that wasn't true on every other show I worked at, certainly on Veep, we had people come in from the world of politics and talk and stuff, but it was a more obviously satirical show, Veep, right? It was very, very heightened. So you could take reality and really kind of run with it. Whereas Succession was, the tone of it was just completely different, even though, you know, you could say that there were satirical elements of it, like that it felt, a lot of it felt very real. Like, you know, it's just sort of like, I think you guys said this at the beginning, it's like unlike any other show I've ever worked on or seen, where it's sort of, even for me, like sometimes I feel like I write something or I do something and be like, well, I think this is exactly right for the show. And then everyone would be like, no, that's not the show. And then you write something or say something and I'd be like, well, this is going to sound really stupid. And then people are like, yes, let's do that. So it was, yeah, it really was a humbling experience. I mean, Succession. I mean, it really was, because, you know, it's like, I mean, I've said this to people too. Like, I understand why Friends was popular. Like, I get it, right? It's like, it was one of the last kind of great, like, sitcoms that had real mass appeal. It's about dating. It's about friends. It's stuff everyone can relate to. But if you think about Succession, right, it's like, it's such a, it's amazing that it caught on the way it did and that it captured people's imagination the way it did, just because the world is so specific and so unrelated to most people's lives, right? And so that kind of blew me away a little bit, I knew, like, you know, when you're working on something, you feel like, oh, wow, this is good. These actors are good. Everyone involved in the show is really good. But how it captured everyone's imagination, became such a, like, you know, must-see kind of TV. That was something that was, I think, a surprise, you know?
You mentioned something that's really interesting to me about the winners of last year's Emmy, the Bear, Beef, and Succession, on top of all being one-word titles, they are paradigm-shifting TV shows, which we keep coming back to. And I've talked about this with other people. They shifted the writing of television, too. The dialogue's different. The rhythms are different. When I'm on an action procedural right now, you know, anything longer than 2.5 pages that's not on its feet, it's going to die on screen. But right. Here you guys have multiple people sitting down at desks just talking. Right. But obviously they're not just talking for pages, 10, 12. I mean, this thing just goes on and on and on. How does that change you as a writer coming out? Because that did feel like new television to me.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Actually, I just finished a draft of something that is where, like, the last scene, the kind of the most dramatic scene in the show is a conversation between two brothers that's probably like 15 pages long, and they're just sitting in two chairs talking about their family. And I was like, I was thinking about it because it was like, this is so different and then exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I can't say that I really know what the answer is, except it to feel like, that you're absolutely right. I mean, you felt it like tonally on all those shows, like, you know, The Bear, like, you know, the second season of The Bear. I mean, those are almost like, you know, 10 short films, right? Like, about different subjects, exploring different facets of the characters, like, and like, that was yeah, pretty radical, I thought, you know, especially if you've taken if you think about it, like what you're saying, like, you know, on a procedural or on a sitcom, like the whole point is to create a template that then is endlessly repeatable, right? And so to have a hit show that then in the next season, you're like, we're just going to throw out this lovely thing that we created, right? With all these relationships between these characters and just do these kind of solo one-off episodes and have it work. It's a testament to the people who are involved, right? I mean, ultimately. But I agree with you, it's very different. And I don't know. I mean, I could theorize, right? I think one of the things that's gotten thrown out in the age of streaming is the long time returning series, is shows like that are procedural, like crime shows, things like that, that used to be like, you know, kind of the backbone of broadcast television, right? And now I think the first few years of streaming was just endless novelty and new. And, you know, the rise of the limited series with huge movie stars in them and everything. And I think I feel like the pendulum is swinging back, at least what people tell me, like, right. But I do think that there's a certain kind of pleasure in watching a show, that is, you know what you're getting every week too. And I think, you know, I mean, whatever, we did that on Succession too. You know, I mean, I remember when, you know, there were long discussions about like when, even in we talked about whether Logan should die during the third season, and kind of quickly put that to rest. And then there were conversations throughout about when should it happen. And one of the things that I think, and this goes to your point about like trying to do new things, like Jesse was, I remember like at the table read for that episode, because we talked about, there was a strong resistance to not doing it towards the end of the season and then just sort of wrapping it up, right? Saying like, we knew we wanted to tell a story about the siblings, and that was always part of it. But like, I remember Jesse wrote that episode, the Connor's wedding, where Logan dies, and he was like, you know, sometimes the show is a comedy and sometimes it's a drama and sometimes it's a documentary. And he's like, this episode is a documentary episode. And if you watch, it really is. And I think really came from him, this idea of wanting to, death doesn't happen in a convenient narrow way narratively when you want it to. It's like, drop it in the middle and then see what happens. And I think just because he is such a brilliant writer, he was able to maintain that kind of documentary idea through the writing of it, and to resist imposing order on it, which as a writer is really hard to do, right? Like, you have your brain, you're like, oh, I set this up, I got to pay this off, and this character says this. It's like, no. And to be able to turn that part of your brain off is really, really hard. But I think the reason that episode was so good is because he did. I mean, and it really felt like, I even watching it was like, and I obviously knew it was going to happen. I'm like, shit, it doesn't feel like a character dying. I feel like a person actually died. And so just in terms of novel, I hadn't seen anything like that on TV before, I think. And it was a weird feeling watching it, because it almost feels like you're watching a real event unfold, and part of you knows it's fictional, but your brain has been tricked somehow into thinking it's real, you know?
Surely. Look, this is a fascinating episode. We could do this all day. I think Noah definitely would want to do a whole Succession series, but that's not how this podcast works. So we're going to have to wrap it up with what is our traditional final question. So, Ted, if you could give a single piece of advice to somebody looking to enter the industry, what would that single piece of advice be?
I would say, write something you're really, listen to yourself and write something you're really passionate about and try to put it out there. I think ultimately that is, is the thing that's going to give you the best chance of success on your own terms, I think. And, you know, and I think throughout your career too, to go back and try to do that, to make the time to say, what kind of thing do I want to do now? What kind of story do I want to tell now? What's meaningful to me? Because I think that people are looking for that kind of thing and they respond to it if you put it out there.
Very good. Ted Cohen, terrible lawyer, excellent writer. Thank you very much indeed for coming on our show.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Screaming Into the Hollywood Abyss, brought to you by Scriptation. Thank you, as ever, to James Launch for the music, and thank you to our loyal listeners. And if there's any showrunners out there who want to hear their fellow showrunners abused and ruffled around and put under the microscope so you can hear their stories of rejection, failure, and adversity, please send them our way. If you are interested in following us on social media, no, I've lost track.
I am at Ann Evslin on Twitter or X or whatever Elon Musk now calls it. And thanks to Elon Musk, I'm also at Noah Evslin on Hive, Spoutable, Blue Sky, Threads, Mastodon, MySpace, Friendster, and I'm sure 1,000 more.